This is Fail Farrand. And I am driving home. I'm really hoping this is going to work. I'm in my mother-in-law's car, Nana's car. It's the second preacher car we have. She died a couple of years ago now. And so we inherited her car. So I'm in her car as opposed to my old preacher car. And the dashboard is slanted differently. And when I've tried this before, there's been some troubles about things sliding off. So I'm doing something a little bit different with the foam padding. Hopefully this will help. I'm a little bit discombobulated this morning. And it is morning. I had breakfast with a friend. It's Thursday, and I am driving back home now. But I'm technically still on vacation. So we still have today. We're going to kick around and do a few things. And then kind of get back into the swing of things tomorrow. We actually had a lovely vacation. We went up to Jeff City for the first night just to kind of break up the trip. And then we headed into Hannibal. Spent like 3 days in Hannibal, 3.5 days in Hannibal. That was a lot of fun. I didn't realize how tightly integrated Hannibal, Missouri was with Mark Twain's stories about Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn. And in fact, the characters in those books had corollaries to characters in real life. And so, you know, the whole town had little tours and actually had the original buildings where Mark Twain had grown up in his childhood, and where the girl who was called Becky Thatcher in the books, they had her house there. And so it was very interesting. It was very interesting. Obviously, Hannibal holds Mark Twain in high regard and is really a lot of the foundation of their economy there in Hannibal. But there's lots to see and lots of stories, and it was fun. It was fun. Storytellers, you know, it's amazing the impact that storytellers can have. And then from there, we went to Herman and spent just a day in Herman. That was plenty. Herman is a very quaint little town in the middle of Missouri wine country. I have never seen a town more dedicated to wine. Lots of wine tasting places, lots of bed and breakfasts, lots of little places to stay overnight. But that's about it. Surprisingly enough, not many fast food restaurants. Lots of places to get bratwurst and those types of things. But we were looking for some place to get some breakfast. And it was really funny because I had looked up on TripAdvisor, you know, top 5 places to get breakfast in Hannibal. And number 4 was Subway. I mean, there were little coffee shops and stuff, and there was a bratwurst kind of cafe and general store type thing. But in terms of just sit-down restaurants, we just couldn't find that many. Maybe they're there, but we just... So it was good to go. We enjoyed Herman. It's a quaint little town. Fascinating culture, but, you know, we didn't expect we were going to stay there longer than a day because we saw everything that we wanted to see and we weren't necessarily interested in going for wine tasting. So then we ended up yesterday in Lake of the Ozarks. We came down from Herman into Lake of the Ozarks because there's a shop there called Evergreen that my wife really loves shopping at. And so we dropped into Evergreen and I took my computer into the back where they have a sofa and some recliners, and I just did some editing. And then when she got done with all her shopping, and then We said, well, here we are. We're an hour and a half from home. We could get a hotel room for one more night. And we both just decided, you know what? We're ready to go home. So we're going to kind of kick around today. We may go see a movie and go buy some flowers and do some of this, that, and the other. It was a good vacation. It was fun. It was worth doing. I am sliding in a costume that I hadn't expected. One of the little challenges with doing the costuming is I have to pay attention because days keep shifting when you go from year to year to year, and a lot of times I will start with the previous year's holidays, bring them forward into the new year, and then just figure out what has to change. Well, one of the things that I missed bringing them forward into the new year from last year was the fact that Father's Day is not this weekend, it's next weekend. I had it this weekend because I just wasn't paying attention, and so that left me with a holiday that I needed for this weekend, and I found out that according to one set of lore, Superman, National Superman Day is July the 12th, or June the 12th, which of course is tomorrow. And I think I may have mentioned this last week in the podcast. By the way, sorry for the abrupt ending of the podcast yesterday, or last week, because we had a FedEx package coming in, and I had this fleeting thought of, oh, just keep the recorder going, because you can just talk over the top of this and it will be quick. Usually they just hop out of the truck and give it to you and they're gone, and then I could go ahead and wrap up, because it never really did get wrapped up last week. But something else told me, nope, you really just should close it down. So I obviously abruptly closed it down, and it was good because it was minutes. It was minutes before we finally got the package and got it underway. And I don't know if they were training an apprentice or what was going on, but it took some time to get it all straightened out. So as far as the costumes go, I do have a really bad Superman costume that I'm going to wear tomorrow. And I'm not exactly sure what the bit is yet. It has something to do, maybe. I've got some Clark Kent style glasses that I pulled out of the drawer. And I'm going to wear those. And of course, I'll have my new haircut, which will be the first time tomorrow that I'm kind of out in public in Walmart in that, because I wore the donut costume last week and it covers up my head so no one can see that I cut my hair. So I'm probably going to do something about a disguise, or, you know, not expecting people to recognize me. I don't know. Something will come up. Jesus will provide something. So it will be fine. So that's good. I have been editing along on book 24. I took it along with me. And so in the mornings when I'd get up before Net and putter around and get my exercising done and then, you know, have some time, I've been sitting down and working through the pages. I have all the input from the beta readers in a PDF, and then I'm going line by line, you know, through that stuff and entering it into the Word document that I have for the changes. And so I'll continue that today. I did get my first set of books with all the redesigned covers in for the first 8, and that looks good. The second set of 8 is supposed to be coming in today or tomorrow. And so we're going to get that under control and see what that looks like. I did have kind of an interesting thing happen on just one of the books. I ordered 2 copies of all the books because I was going to give one whole set to my daughter with all the redesigned covers on it, and so I had ordered two copies of book 7, and when I pulled them out of the box and kind of stood them up to see how the spines looked all together, I noticed that in one set, book 7 was noticeably shorter than all the other books, and I was like, what? As it turns out, I think they printed it on the wrong format, because instead of 6x9, it ended up as something like 5¾ by 8¾, which I'm sure is some kind of European size. And so I wrote them about that. I had to do it through the returns. And so that means I'm going to be sending them back a book that they printed for me. To Amazon, but that's what they wanted to do. So if they want to pay for the shipping cost to send it back to them so they can throw it in the trash, that's fine. Anyway, so I can already tell that this day is going to feel a little weird because it is a Thursday and I usually work on Thursdays, but I'm not working on Thursday today. So it's going to be weird kicking around in town and not actually putting in a couple hours for headquarters, but that's okay. That's all right. I need to get used to it because it won't be too long now. Here in a couple of months, we'll be on the 2-year countdown. Being done being a consultant and just start doing the fully retired thing. But I just suspect that I will find plenty of things to occupy my time. So it will be fine. It will be fine. This week, I have my notes from the talk that I was going to do last week before the whole AI chatbot stuff came up. And specifically, these notes were also an issue that I have touched on in the past that I just find to be a fascinating topic. And it all centers around perception, and is the world what we perceive it to be? Is the world what we see it to be? Or is the world something different? And all of this, I think, falls into that broad category of it is the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. And I think it all falls into that broad category as well of mankind wrestling with what might be above him in terms of capabilities and authorities, and that man wrestles with what is their place within the universe, and who do they answer to? I think a Google Street View car just drove by me. I will have to check. He was going pretty fast. I don't know how fast those Google cars go, but it was on the little side road that we use to connect between Highway 65 and H Highway, but it had all the little stuff on it, so it was either a self-driving car or it was Google Street View. So who knows, maybe in a week or so, if I look up that corner, I may see Nana's silver car on Street View. Anyways, because as we move through this life, there's always the question of, is there something more? Is there a God? Is there what is required of me? What is the purpose of life? Those types of things. And it's always fascinating to me to watch as consensus or as theories move closer and closer to the fact that there is more than just this materialistic world. Certainly, simulation theory, I think it's called, that we live in a simulation, certainly that has opened up a lot of discussion points. Because in my mind, a very real sense, we can say from the Christian perspective that we live in a simulation. We acknowledge in the Christian perspective that this earth is not necessarily our home. That there is more waiting for us. That we are having an experience here that is not our final experience. Beyond that, Colossians does tell us very clearly that Christ made all these things. He built this world. And you might say, well, that's not really a simulation because it's a real world. And it is real in the definition that we use. I truly believe that matter exists. I believe that the cosmos exists, that our solar system exists, that the Milky Way exists, made up of billions and billions and hundreds of billions of stars, that our universe exists with hundreds of billions of galaxies in it. I believe those things are real, that when we are making observation of those things, that it's not a simulation in terms of what you might do if you were trying to simulate it on a computer, because on a computer what you would do is you would only render those things that are being observed. And instead of that, I believe that Christ is the first observer. He's the prime observer. He observes everything. And by his observation, everything becomes reality and remains reality. That's what Colossians, in essence, tells us, that by him all things consist. But still, you can easily reinterpret that verse, by him all things consist, to mean that by him all things are simulated. By him, by his mind, he brings into being this reality that we are experiencing. And so it's kind of interesting to me when you see scientists such as Douglas Hoffman, who was on a show with Jesse Michaels, and he has been proposing for some time and continues to insist that the mathematics that exists around this idea is pristine, that this is what the math is showing us, this is what makes predictions, that we are actually in a simulation, and that in fact our perceptions of that simulation are governed by survivability, not necessarily truth. And he would insist that when they run all the scenarios, that the only things that we have evolved to see and to experience are those things which benefit our survival, and they aren't necessarily things that show us the world as it is true. So this modern evolutionary game theory that he is proposing is that evolution rewards fitness, not truth. In other words, organisms that perceive reality accurately are often outcompeted by organisms that perceive only what is useful for survival and reproduction. Okay, well, that's an interesting theory. Then it gets, when he tries to explain it, it's when it almost becomes amusing for me. Because the way he explains it is to say that our interface to this world, our sight, our sound, touch, taste, feel, all that stuff, is really like a desktop interface. That icon that's sitting on our desktop, we see that as a representation of an object. In our minds, we connect it. It might have a little folder there. And so we double-click on that folder and it opens up and shows us what's inside there. But the reality is there's no little folders on your hard drive. There are collections of blocks of bytes that make up a document, and then that document has certain pointers and tags that say that it is inside this virtual folder, and it presents it to the user as a folder because it's easy for the user to conceptualize of it that way. But that's not necessarily the truth of what's happening. And he suggests that the world that we live in is exactly the same way. That just like there are files and folders and trash cans and icons and things on our desktop, but what's actually there is voltages and circuitry and memory states and electrical activity. What we see around us is just that same type of thing, that there's actually a reality that we can't perceive, and that in his calculations, none of that is actually real. Now, of course, this is a very controversial stance. He feels like he's got the mathematics to support it, and he keeps advancing his cases, and he's been talking about this for years. But it has always amused me from a certain perspective, because, you know, if you squint at this theory, you really don't have to have too much modification to make this fit within this whole idea of by him all things consist. Because we are having an earthly experience here, and I do believe it's a real earthly experience. I'm backing into my garage, which is a little harder in Nana's car because I don't have a backup camera. So I'm having to kind of look and see where we are. You know, if you're willing to go so far as to say that Jesus is just simulating all of this experience, that we exist in his mind, and that we are living out our lives within him, if you're willing to go that far in defining what it means when it says that in him all things consist, then certainly the idea of simulation theory is easily adopted, and certainly this idea that we have an interface that has been built for us that operates and only shows us the things that are necessary for us to see as we move through this life, that idea easily folds in. But the only reason that that idea folds in to these concepts of our perception being a desktop interface, didn't quite get back far enough, gotta go a little more, is because there's a designer. It's because there is a medium that we are existing in. In the case of those theories, oh, see now, where is my, nope, that's not it. Wait, oh, rats. Oh, come on. I'm looking for the buttons. Hey, there we go. I was looking for the buttons to turn on the lights. I'm not that familiar with this car. You know, the only reason that that folds in so easily, this Christian belief system, into what Douglas Hoffman is trying to say is because there is a designer. There is a substrate, which is Jesus, or whatever computing power Jesus has. And it's all running on that, because a lot of the things that he invokes when he's trying to describe how this thing works are mechanistic. I mean, there's so many things in this that require some sort of a substrate of operation to support the user interface that he says we're working with. And he seems to be defining things that are beyond what his primary driver is capable of doing. Because he keeps saying over and over, well, evolution designed us, or evolution adapted us to see this, or evolution, but this is a very specific, technologically oriented type idea that what we are seeing in our receptors, in our sensors, is not what actually is, but is simply what's designed to be fit. Like, how would... I don't know. I have a hard time making my brain fit around analogies that are primarily technological analogies when you're saying that what brought about all of that was just a mindless, random process. I mean, one of the things that he was, he offered as an example that I probably will use when I do Still Whispers Machinations was the whole idea of the jewel beetle and the beer bottle. And I'm sure you've heard of this before, but it illustrates how easily our systems can be compromised. And I think it even offers us some advice as we move forward in life, in case you haven't heard of this. So male jewel beetles in Australia seek mates by using simple visual clues, which, by the way, so do humans. So do humans. And I'm going to get into that further when I write the book. Then humans, setting back to this anecdote, introduced brown, shiny, dimpled beer bottles. And the beetles became obsessed. In fact, many preferred the bottles over actual females. Why? Because evolution didn't teach them what a female really is. It only taught them a shortcut. Now then, whether you say it's evolution or it's just the way it's designed, it doesn't matter. Listen to what the shortcut is. Female equals shiny, brown, and dimpled. And I would maintain that men have a definition for females that is just as simplistic. But for us, it has to do with curves, certain types of curves and dimensions of curves. That equals female. So that shortcut that these Australian jewel beetles have of shiny, brown, and dimpled worked great for, you know, however many thousands and millions of years, until beer bottles came along and got littered through their environment. And once their environment changed, like the male Jewel Beetles got obsessed with these beer bottles because when they looked at them, what came out on the other end of their processing was female. So that was cute. So anyways, they did bring up another point that was interesting, that Hoffman's deepest criticism of modern science is that science depends entirely on observations, and yet science has no complete theory explaining what an observation is, why an observation occurs, or how subjective experience arises. According to Hoffman, the observer is the foundation of science. Without observers, no experiments exist, no data exist, no scientific theories exist, yet observers themselves remain unexplained. And that's a good point. And then, of course, there is the hard problem of consciousness. Like, what is consciousness? And how does it work? And how is this illusion generated? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's very, very difficult. And it's all integrated into this. Now, if it's true that by him all things consist, then I think we have to take that into account when we're talking about consciousness. And here recently, the way I've just come to express this, and it's not necessarily original with me, it's obvious if you look at things like near-death experiences that our consciousness survives this physical body. And in fact, I think at this point, the way I would express it, and as I said, it's not original with me, is that our existence here, our bodies, really are just quantum interfaces to our consciousness that lives in a reality someplace other than here. But for the most part, this interface confines us to only operating in this environment, which is very close to what Douglas Hoffman is saying. He is saying that we're operating with an interface at a very low level that we can only see certain things. And what I think it's easy to fit within the Christian belief system is that we have a consciousness, we have a breath, we have a life from God that has been given to us, and that that life and that consciousness exists in him, but it doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily a product of our physical bodies. We are simply in these physical bodies, experiencing this life, having the opportunity to grow, having the opportunity to actually create, produce, disciple, share, experience all of these different things in this life, and then learn from those things and carry those experiences with us as we move into other realms and we are finally freed from these bodies. So, you know, it's really interesting to watch as people are trying to wrestle with this idea of why are we here? How are we conscious? What's the purpose of life? What's actually going on? And Douglas Hoffman certainly has a lot of interesting ideas, but most fascinatingly enough to me is that the ideas that he has quite easily, in my opinion, can fold into the Christian belief system. And so it's going to be interesting to see as this moves along, how these ideas are going to be explored, how they're going to either be accepted or not accepted within the scientific community. But it's hard for me to understand if you really move into some sort of simulation theory of life, it's hard for me to understand how you can be a strict materialist. Because as soon as you start moving into some of these ideas that Douglas Hoffman has, or that simulation theory has, that we are all running in some simulation on some computer and some substrate, then you have to start asking yourself, well, is this really all there is, or is there another life out there, another world out there, another level of existence out there? And then in that case, it's really hard to just be a materialist and say that all there is this universe. And if there's more than just this universe, then the question is, what do those who do not live in this universe, who are controlling our existence, what is it that they want from us? And then, of course, you've driven yourself back into the idea of some sort of greater world, and we are living out some pageant. And if we're living out some pageant, is there a way to live that out better than other ways? And do we want to know what that is so we can please whoever is staging this pageant? You know, I mean, there's a whole lot of interesting things that work out from this. When I asked ChatGPT to give me some notes on this, it's interesting. This is the way it concluded its final thoughts. This interview is less about proving aliens exist and more about questioning a hidden assumption, because proving that aliens exist was all about the fact that who would be running these simulations. Maybe the aliens are here the whole time. Maybe they're the ones who are running the simulations. But that again folds back into, is there a higher reality, and do we have some need to please that reality or to try to figure out what that reality wants from us? So it says that Hoffman's work is more about questioning the hidden assumption. What if human perception is not a window into reality, but a simplified survival interface? Then it concluded Hoffman's work is highly controversial. Many neuroscientists, physicists, and philosophers disagree with his conclusions. However, this interview offers a fascinating exploration of consciousness, perception, evolution, and the possibility that what we call reality may be far stranger than it appears. I'm really looking forward to getting to heaven and just seeing what was really going on here, because this life is just fascinating. This is Phil Farron, and I have finally made it.